Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in the show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. We've got a special show for you this week. We've been a little hit and miss on and off over the last couple of weeks. We've had some scheduling conflicts and whatnot, but we're doing a special show for you tonight. It's all Twitter questions, and we're doing this live with a chat that we'll be taking questions from a little later. But joining me is Hope Chapman. Hope, thanks for showing up in my office.
Yes. Hi there.
And also joining us, special guest Mike Toole. Mike, thanks for coming by.
Oh, no problem. I just happened to have stumbled upon a podcast. How delightful.
You were just walking down the street and you were like, hey, a podcast. I'm going to get in on that. So this is going to be all questions. Normally we do sort of like a what you've been watching kind of a thing. But we got a lot of questions in. And I think we can just sort of get right into it. The plan was to go see Godzilla tonight, but the heat is oppressive here in Southern California. It's pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually passed out.
Yeah.
Fell asleep. We meant to go see it, and we'll talk about it next week, I guess. Let's go ahead and just get straight to these Twitter questions. We'll start with a doozy here. We got a doozy.
A doozy?
A doozy.
A doozy bot?
No.
Good.
Divine Nega asks, thoughts on the Guardiola scandal? Yeah.
Don't touch the children.
Yeah. Well, that's
short
just...
That's, don't touch the children.
That's just sad all around, isn't it? I mean, that's...
Yeah, it's a pretty unfortunate situation, and all you can really hope for is that everyone kind of gets out of it without their lives being completely ruined.
Everyone?
Everyone with the exception of the alleged perp.
Yeah.
And there's an investigation pending. We kind of have to leave it to that.
Sure, you can say alleged all you want and everything, and that's great, and you should. Personally, like, you know, everything that was in all those news items and everything, you know, like, I dealt with the forums thread on this, and there is so much up is down and left is right, and if you think about the world this way, he didn't do anything wrong, and why does anyone have a problem with this at all? And
maybe DOG actually spells cat.
Yeah, maybe dogs are cats. And I get really tired of that, and the internet is so overrun with it that you can't just take the evidence that was given, even just in the news articles about it. Like, these were just the basic facts of the case. And people were like, well, if you think about it this way, and it's like, look, you know, it's fine if you want to doubt literally everything, and, well, you know, the most important thing is to think that she's lying about it or whatever, and it's like, It's mind-boggling. Like, I feel like some of these people would see somebody, like, sexually assaulting someone in front of them and be like, well, maybe it's her fault. Like,
let's not shoot conclusions here. We don't have all the facts.
Yeah, like, I the mindset is baffling to me. And also, we're not on the jury. We're not the detectives. I don't have any particular responsibility to not draw my own conclusions. Like, the evidence that was in the police reports indicated that this guy has a serious problem, and even the timing of it all came out to sound super creepy, super ass covery too. Like, when it was revealed that they went and got married in Las Vegas after the cops were investigating him. I mean, guys.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know
she
that
wasn't
detail.
Coerced into that at all.
That shades my reaction a little.
It's
I can't imagine that she was coerced into a Vegas wedding all of a sudden. I probably, you know, what would be the cause of that? I'm sure she wanted to get married right away.
Maybe she did.
I'm not saying that she didn't, because, you know, she's a kid, she's dumb. I'm just saying, like, if it's after the investigation, I bet I know who was like, hey, we should get married now.
Yeah, it's really important to say, like, he hasn't been convicted of anything. You know, that's important to say.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's anything wrong with saying, like, this is creepy, that guy seems like a huge creep, and this entire situation is fucking gross.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was wrongdoing, which it certainly seems like there was, that guy deserves to spend time in prison and think about what he did. Like, fucking gross. And they were saying, like, the cops are investigating, like, we think there might be others.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, God.
Yeah.
Ah! Plus, he was terrible in Penguin Drum, so...
Well, he was. Everybody was terrible in that. Jesus Christ. Everybody's terrible in most Sentai dubs. Sorry.
He was okay. He was the title character in Saint Seiya. He was fine in that role, but, well...
Well, he's what's funny...
Never going to be able to watch that dub again without thinking of...
Yeah, what's funny is he's in a lot of, like, old ADV stuff. All I could think of was... I was like, you know, I shouldn't, like, this has nothing to do with his anime work or whatever. I mean, it got reported on ANN because he does anime voices, sort of, kind of, and a lot of old dubs and Sentai ones that nobody listens to. But, like, he played a lot of, like, love interest characters because he has an accent. So now I'm just imagining, like, all those reverse harems where the protagonist is a 16-year-old girl and he's one of the love interests, because it's like Pre-Tier and a couple others, and it's like, oh, fuck. that's an unfortunate coincidence.
Yeah, it's just icky all around, and I hope that if wrongdoing is proven, that justice is served, and I lament the fact that it is extremely obvious to me that in cases like this, if it was, like, I think I made the comparison where if they found a 41-year-old priest, like, stupping his 16-year-old altar boy, the defense force wouldn't come out for that. They wouldn't care.
They wouldn't be like, maybe it's love.
Yeah, maybe it's real true love, guys. Maybe you don't understand, and it's in other countries that are more enlightened, this sort of thing would be totally fine.
They make it a girl.
Oh, yeah, but if it's a 41-year-old... sleeping with a 16-year-old girl, suddenly, well, if you think about it this way, they figure out ways to justify it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gross. Moving on. Let's move on.
Yes, let's do it.
Wayne One asks, ever consider doing MCAS t-shirts or something like that? The thing that I want to make that I just haven't yet is coffee mugs.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of the only... thing that's sort of appropriate to make is, like, coffee mugs, maybe tote bags or something, but I would only make, like... Maybe
you're not going to make a wacky, weird, arm-flailing, inflatable Zach?
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
No?
yeah, I was thinking about making coffee mugs, and I think in order to make 100 of them, I got to pay, like, $500, so, you know, maybe I would charge $6 or something per mug or whatever. You know, just so they exist in the world, not to, like, make a profit or anything like that. Just so that something exists. It would be neat. But I wouldn't make, like, a lot of merchandise. But coffee mugs, I think, is sort of the thing that makes sense. All right. Our friend Jeff Tebbets asks... Or, I'm sorry, his name is Geoff.
Geoff.
Geoff Tebbets.
Geoff.
Asks... Thoughts on the thoughts on the preliminary Sailor Moon Crystal cast list. Anyone, Mike?
Well, I mean, the name that has jumped out to a lot of us is Ami Koshimizu, the voice of Ryuko from Kill la Kill, playing Sailor Jupiter. I think that is totally appropriate, and I'm psyched to hear that.
Okay, Hope.
I haven't been paying attention to Sailor Moon Crystal stuff. So.
Well, you don't really. I mean, Sailor Moon just is sort of.
No, I didn't grow up with it, so I mean, like, I will be. I'm eager to. Discover it for the first time by watching the rejuvenation, but I don't have that nostalgia factor, so I haven't been, like, following up to that point. I'm just going to approach it as, like, a new thing and see how it kind of plays, you know.
And then, well, there's also Kotono Mitsuishi, is it? I'm trying to bring her name out. The voice of Sailor Moon.
Right.
It's going to be interesting to see her as, like, the one member of the cast reprising her role.
Oh, so she was the original Sailor Moon?
Oh, yeah. And I think she's 45 or 46 now. And, yeah, she's going to be Sailor Moon again.
That is wacky.
I wonder if they'll, like, pitch her up or something.
Right.
I don't know. We'll find out. In that project in general, it'll be interesting to see what they make. I was underwhelmed by the character designs, but I can't sit here and pretend like I care that much. So, you know, it's a thing.
Yeah, I'm mostly just eager to see it as, hey, this seems like a good opportunity to, like, somebody who's not really familiar with Sailor Moon to, like, see what grabbed people about this story. This seems like a really good opportunity to do that. So, you know, it's like, okay.
I kind of hope they don't fuck it up.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, that's really my hope at this point, too. I think the character designs look nice. I'm really concerned about just what we've learned about the production schedule. The fact it's going to be, like, bi-weekly. That's kind of weird, right?
Yeah, that's really weird. And the fact that, like, the show's already been delayed, like, a year or more, right? Like, it's been...
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know what the hell's going on with that show, but I'm hoping it doesn't just show up and it's a huge train wreck. Like, that would be really bad. Like, they can't fuck that up. That property's really important. I mean, they can.
Mm-hmm.
And then no one will care about Sailor Moon anymore, which will kind of suck. That's all it would really take, is, like, if that show is terrible, then that's it. You know, they're not going to make it again, they're not going to try again. It's just going to be, a letdown. Okay. I'm sorry. Corey, did you join the call?
I just did, yes.
You snuck in the back door.
You snuck in the back door. Okay, I guess also joining us is the host of the Beta Male Experience podcast. He was, you were on a previous call-out show. I think that's
a couple of them, yeah.
I think that's your cat.
Yeah, it's my cat as well.
Yeah. it's Corey Proft, friend of the show, and joining us now several minutes in.
I am honored to be here with the leading expert of Goof Troop.
Hey, I'll take it. you got the leading expert of Goof Troop and the leading expert on the 2002 smash hit film Ghost Ship in the same place for the first time. So... okay, moving on from Madman 400, he asks thoughts on Outbreak Company. I didn't watch Outbreak Company.
Neither have I.
Was that a thing from last fall?
Yeah, I feel like that was a show that came and went really quickly.
I missed that one.
No,
I didn't see it as well.
Yeah.
All right, moving on.
Sorry.
That's fine. Okay, also from Madman 400. What are your opinions on the future of anime on linear commercial television, given the success of Toonami? I think that's the only place that's going to succeed. That's the only place that's going to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
It's important, but it's interesting to look at the numbers where you have 1.5 million viewers being held up as a positive, which it is, but man, even like 5 or 10 years ago, that would have been considered a very small number.
Well, it would have, but 5 or 10 years ago, the media landscape was, it may as well have been Mars compared to what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Netflix, didn't even come into ascendancy until, 3 or 4 years ago, so.
Yeah, exactly, and I think looking at those numbers and saying, man, that used to be a drop in the bucket. It did, but now, that's enough to sustain something or be considered a gigantic hit. And that is, for 1.5 million people for Attack on Titan that's really, really good.
Well, people were flipping out about that, but I have to point out that, hey, man, Space Dandy was getting those numbers, too.
It was, and we got more of it as a result. So I'm happy about, that matters for something like Space Dandy, where that needed to get those kind of numbers in order to get more produced.
Attack on Titan was always going to get more
Attack produced. On Titan was always going to have more produced. That was never an issue. Like, if it failed on Toonami or no one watched it for whatever reason, that would have been kind of a bummer. But it's not like it would have been bad for the show itself. But we get more Space Dandy as a result of that show doing the numbers that it did. Mm-hmm. So, you know, everything in context.
Yeah. It just... I mean, 1.5, and when do they show it at? They show it at... I watch it when it gets onto my DVR. I mean, it's on at like 11 o'clock, right?
Yeah, it's like about o'clock. I mean,
11:30.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Like, getting 1.5 million viewers to watch that.
I mean, like, clearly it just works for Toonami, it just works for really specific properties, because remember when the blog launched, like, even stuff that you would think kinda maybe appeals, like, okay, not Cashier and Sins, I don't know what they were thinking there, but, like, Dead Man Wonderland doesn't really, it's like, no, this is still too, Dead Man Wonderland is still too anime, like...
Yeah, still too, still
really
a little too obtuse and strange.
Particular, yeah, you need something really particular, and so it's not just for anime in general, but for that specific breed of okay, this works for a larger audience, and so you have Space Dandy and Attack on Titan, and not a whole lot else, some other stuff, but you know, Sword Art Online turned out to be kind of too anime. Not that I don't think it was a disappointment or anything, but you know, it's too anime still.
Have you guys watched the with the dub now? Haven't you? Have you all? And what are our thoughts on that? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen the dub version.
I wrote like 2,000 words on it, so people know what my thoughts are.
Yeah, I don't think it's that bad. I still prefer the Japanese version much more, and I have no aversion to dubs. Actually, I prefer dubs, but here. I thought it was okay.
It's a different approach, certainly, right?
Yeah.
It feels different from a lot of dubs I've seen.
I liked that they were trying something different. I thought the quality jumped way up when they get into the core. The drill sergeant scene, like, I was a little iffy on all the kid stuff, and then once they get into the drill sergeant scene, I was like, oh, man, this sounds fucking perfect. It sounds like people talking to each other. It's funny. It, like, you know, and that's hard to do. Comic timing's kind of hard to do with dubbing anime. And so I thought that was great, but the biggest hindrance is you can tell the episodes that a certain head writer on the dub script team worked on. You can tell which episodes are his. Immediately the language changes, like the type of language that people use changes, the cadence. I don't like it. Like, I don't think it works for Attack on Titan. I think it works for like Romeo X Juliet, Steins Gate, Black Butler. Like, it works for those shows, but it doesn't work for Attack on Titan. And, yeah, I think that's the biggest hindrance, is that there are some adaptive script choices that just don't work for this. But that's really a nitpick. I mean, the acting casting kind of pushes past that pretty well, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have a strong opinion on it either way. I liked the show. It you know, I'd read the comics up to the point where I think... At that, like, by the time the show was being animated, I'd read enough of the comics to know what was going to happen, and so the show wasn't all that interesting because I kind of knew what was going to happen. And so I didn't really get into the show that much, and then I saw some of the dub, and it seems perfectly fine to me. I don't have a problem with it. I mean, you can generally tell when they fuck those things up really badly, but
yeah.
That seemed totally fine. And I did like, oh, putting this out in her review, it's really guttural, and that show needed that. It needed a lot of the breath-catching and sort of raggedness in the voice, and a lot of dubs clean that stuff up or take it out, and that dub totally needed that stuff in there, and it's in there, and that's good. So
yeah, I agree.
It's good. I think it's fine. I think
you can hear people's lunch coming up. It's very satisfying.
And I think... For whatever reason, like, I'm seeing people say, like, oh, this dub is fucking horrible. It's like, you're just saying that because the show's really popular. If no one gave a shit about the show, you'd be like, the dub's fine or whatever. You just, that seems like totally over the top to hear that dub.
I disagree, Zach, just on the basis of they are trying something a little different, and that's jarring. I like it, but I don't think people are reacting to nothing.
I think a lot of people get pissy about it. I noticed that the most divisive thing is Armin. People either really love it or hate it. I really, really like it. I think it's good. I think he sounds like a really shaky, sort of inside his own head kid. But people don't like it because it doesn't have that pure, like, archetypal say you kind of sound to it, which, you know, most anime, it's rare that anime isn't cast like archetypal say you kind of acting. Attack on Titan's no exception. The acting is good, but the way that people play their roles is very anime in Japanese, and so in English, it's just, he just sort of sounds like a person, and he doesn't, like, when he talks, he doesn't sound attractive or, like, well-spoken, and he just sounds like this awkward, kind of annoying teenager, and it's like, yes, that's what this character is supposed to be. And people who are sort of escapist anime fans are like, no, I want this character to sound, like, attractive or cool or smart or whatever, and it's like, well, there are a bunch of 14-year-olds that are, they're child soldiers, like, that, you know, like, they're approaching this material with that in mind, and I think that's fine. I think that's a good approach to have.
Yeah, I agree. I think their delivery is supposed to be overwrought and stylized. I mean,
it's not natural. It's not like the,
no.
It's not like the dub
well, I mean,
natural,
even the animation and the whole style and the storytelling of that is hyper stylized and over bombastic, and I think it fits well, especially from the first episode. I thought they even the powerful moment at the end, I think they still pulled it off within the dub, and I think that's the most important thing, is when it has to hit a beat, I felt that more or less it did. I wasn't too judgmental on the writing. I mean, I've only seen the two episodes, and I couldn't tell the difference far as, like, which writer who... But I wasn't paying that much attention to it, so...
No, I've seen the Japanese version of that show, like, four times by now, before the dub came out. I kept, like, going back and looking at episodes. I found I really, really, really liked that show, and, yeah, so I'd kind of... Even if I didn't have to compare it to subtitles, like, I know what certain lines mean and what they're supposed to, you know, so I'm really picky, like, but, you know.
Okay. Yeah, because I only watched it once through... in the Japanese subtitles, and I like the show a lot, but I'm nowhere near as hardcore as you are. Hope, sorry.
Well, no, I'm you know, a huge fan of that.
More power to you.
Yeah, well, I think it's fine. You know, I've been in this long enough to remember that when the original Full Metal Alchemist series came out, there was similar bitching about how this is the worst dub ever, and, like, it's just because they watched it subtitled first, and they saw that version first, and, yeah, whatever. You'll get the fuck over it. Alright. Okay, Ross Dickerhoof asks, can it be just as important to see reprehensible stuff like Mahoka as it is to see really great stuff like Mushishi? No.
No.
Oh, I mean, I...
I wouldn't say just as important.
Beyond reprehensible, the notices I've seen from Mahoka have been, like, no one's talking about how good a show it is. If something has reprehensible material but is really compelling, I'd be tempted to give it a look, but it sounds mediocre.
Yeah. The only thing interesting about Mahoka, I watched more of it because I promised that I would. The only thing interesting about it is how revolting it is. But it, as a show, like, it's saving grace. Like, thank God it's not going to get any kind of, like, real fandom. Like, 4chan will move on to something else because it is so dry and incompetently written, and it has no characters, and it's just one guy screening his terrible opinion through a bunch of cardboard anime stereotypes at you. Like, that's great that it's like that, because it means nobody will give a shit about it in enough time. Like, you know. Very little time, I think. It's quite bad. So you have to really be paying attention to what the ideas in it are to go, oh, right, this is awful. But, yeah.
So you're saying that this is, like, the anime equivalent of The Counselor?
No. It's Atlas Shrugged. it's Randian stuff. It's straight up actually Randian stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, what the hell? You know.
Well, from what I understand, it's kind of like baby's first objectivist screed. Like,
yeah.
That's kind of what it is.
With incest.
Yeah, well, plus all the other shit that, you know, they know they can sell an otaku-based thing on. Like,
it pollutes my Twitter feed, and I don't think it's important because of that reason. Really. Everybody just posts really gross things from it, and it, yeah.
Yeah, the impression that the show gives is that it's, you know, the show itself is not nearly as entertaining as watching people react to the show.
Yeah,
exactly.
Correct.
I'm not watching it, but I love seeing the screen grabs. Just the dialogue. The dialogue alone is like, are you kidding me?
But I mean, like, I think there is value. Like, I'm glad that I've seen those portions of Mahoka. It gave me a good laugh, and I mean, it was interesting. I think it exposed like some weird, shitty opinions that people have that like are unlocked by this show. So I mean, like. It's a little soul-crushing, but I'm glad that I saw it and that I experienced that, I guess, because it was interesting. Like, so, good or bad, like, good is better, like, good is more, is better for you as a person to ingest, but, like, so long as it's interesting and it shows you something interesting about the way that art can be, you know, manipulated to be the worst thing you've ever seen or the best thing you've ever seen, like, so long as it has value and it's not, like, a boring, dull, mediocre thing.
Yeah, the difference I see is that with good things, a constructive discussion can come out of it. But for like Mahoka, I mean, I just like Mike said, you just see people react to it, and then that's it, which is entertaining. Don't get me wrong, but I mean, it's not expanding my worldview of somehow, and that does not all entertainment needs to be, but good things do. I mean, that's just how how I break it down is if something's worthwhile watching, it expands my opinion or my worldview on something. And Reprehensible usually does not do that. It becomes a stop sign of being like, hey, this is where I draw a line, and this is as far as I go in whatever subject matter. And then I back away. And that's usually the end of that. But I mean, is there value in seeing the stop sign? I guess. How far can you fall, I guess, is the question.
I am fascinated by how awkward the English title of this show is. The Irregular at Magic High School.
Yeah.
Still World is Beautiful. Still title is awkward.
Yeah,
that's a full.
Okay. Also from Mad Men 400. What American cartoons do you enjoy? So, I'm going to go ahead and limit this to American cartoons currently airing, because I think the four of us could sit here and just list.
Yeah, oh, right. Dozens. Yeah.
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 I would say, you know, up into the hundreds.
Too bad there's no Goof Troop revival.
Yeah.
Aww.
Aside from Goof Troop.
Sad Zach.
Yeah. Okay, so let's start with Mike on this.
What I've been watching a lot lately is Bob's Burgers, which is, it's kind of ugly and workmanlike, but the scripts are amazing. The range of talent that they have in that show, the comic timing of it is just exceptional. It's incredible. Incredibly enjoyable and weird and interesting to watch. It gets so much right about just family life. It's my favorite sitcom in many years. Maybe like my favorite sitcom since I was a kid and, you know, watching Cheers. That's how much I look forward to it. You know, it's I wouldn't say it's as good as like the golden age of The Simpsons, but it's approaching the outside of that bubble and I'm enjoying it.
I love Bob's Burgers. I'm totally with you on that.
Yeah. So there's that, and the other show, I've been alternating between Bob's Burgers and The Regular Show, which is also kind of script-driven. What I like about The Regular Show is that there's nothing overt about it, but that is such a period piece. That is about dudes in the 90s. It's like they never make explicit reference to it, but, you know, everyone listens to cassette tapes. You got to go wait in line to get concert tickets. You know, there's all kinds of, like, weird little giveaways.
Yeah. I don't know. I find Regular Show.
So those are the.
I was just saying. I find Regular Show kind of annoying, but I don't know if that's like normally I would like that kind of thing, but I found the show kind of annoying.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, but those are the two shows that I've been enjoying lately.
Cool, Corey.
Well, this just came back, and unfortunately, I haven't seen any of the new episodes yet. But the Boondocks came back late April, I believe. Unfortunately, not with Aaron Magruder. That's why I've been hesitant. But they're sitting on my DVR. And if you haven't seen the first three seasons of the Boondocks, they're pretty great. And certainly fits into, I guess, appealing to anime fans with the animation styles and everything. I really enjoy it. Its social commentary is absurd as it is occasionally insightful. It's hilarious. It's one of the few animated shows that makes me laugh like out loud and like to the point of like spit your drink out. I enjoy that. I'm unsure about season four yet. I've just been so busy, I haven't been able to catch up on it. But I do plan on giving it a chance, and I believe that they started putting out the previous seasons on Netflix. And I also think that they're also on Amazon Prime, if I'm not mistaken. I have the DVD set, so I've never had went back to them. But yeah, that's basically it. And then I still watch all of the DC Marvel comic animated DVD movies that they put out, which they're trying to make serialized now. So
have you seen Son of a Batman yet?
No, I haven't seen that one yet. I really like Flashpoint Paradox. I still think that's their best one from what I've seen. I watched and I was not impressed by Justice League War, I believe it was, with Darkseid. That was tedious. And and they changed all of the voice casting around. And apparently those are going to be like the next generation or the current generation of voice actors for however long their contracts are for these movies. But I wasn't very impressed with War and Son of Batman. I'm a little Batmaned out. I don't need to see any more Batman for years to come. I just haven't gotten around to it. I'll probably pick a Sunday afternoon to watch it, but I'm not overly excited with it. They're usually hit and miss, but their animation is always pretty top-notch, especially in action scenes. That's basically where I fall as far as American television goes, since I hate everything that is associated to Seth MacFarlane. So.
Yeah, right. Hope?
Oh, I kind of potluck, I kind of buffet with a lot of the stuff. I've enjoyed, like, the five or so episodes of Bob's Burgers I've seen, and the five or six episodes of Rick and Morty that I've seen, but I don't actively follow them just because, I don't know, there's something about, like, animated comedies that I find it hard to make an appointment viewing. Like, I'll just, like, hear about this was a particularly funny episode and then watch that, because when I hear, oh, this is going to be, like, long-running animated comedy that's largely dialogue-driven, I'm like, oh, one of about a bazillion of these. And if it's funny, then I'll watch it. And both of those are funny, so I'll watch it, like, when it comes up, but I don't, like, watch every episode because... I don't know, like, I just kind of can't get my oomph up toward that, like, stuff that's a little bit more different than that, but those two shows are good. I like the little bits and pieces that I've caught. I'm looking forward to continuing to hate watch Legend of Korra, which
oh, God.
I mean, like, I feel that, so Avatar The Last Airbender is one of my favorite cartoons ever made. I really love that show. That show was fucking gold. And then, Korra, not so much, and I just kind of, I mean, at least, like, sometimes it continues to surprise me with what it does that's bad or good, like, the Avatar 1 episodes were, like, astonishingly coming back to what made Avatar good, and so I enjoyed that I, you know, kept with Korra long enough to get that reward of two good episodes and a slog of terrible, but, you know, I'm looking forward to kind of watching more Korra and sitting and, like, bitching about how bad it is and how terrible the characters are and stuff, you know, in the hopes that something will surprise me.
Man, I couldn't stick with Korra. Yeah, it got too annoying.
It's really obnoxious, yeah. I mean, like,
yeah.
It's,
I watched the whole first season, and I was... Are the two good episodes you're talking about? The, like, the origin?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Then I'm totally with you.
Yeah.
We totally agree on this, because
well,
it was bullshit.
Loved those. Everybody loved those, and then when it went back to the main plot, they're like, oh. And I wonder if just those guys... I wonder if those guys are really not in tune with or as in love with the story they're telling now as they were when they first... Oh, cause we're told, oh, you're getting a sequel. And they, like, came up with all this cool stuff. And because the beginning of Korra is just a huge slew of, like, way too many ideas almost. Like, 10 different ideas at the very beginning. And they try to sort of focus on one, but there's just so many. And then they just sort of fall over themselves trying to conclude maybe one of the storylines. And then after that, it just becomes this fucking death march, this dirge. It's like Star Wars prequel. It's like watching Star Wars and then watching the Star Wars prequels. It's a tired metaphor, but it really, really fits, like, the tone of what's going on here. And I wonder if they just kind of fell out of love with... Maybe they didn't want to do four seasons of this idea they came up with, but here they are, which is why the Avatar 1 episodes are so... Boom, here we go. Here's something with some real care behind it that's funny and fun to watch, and you go back to Korra and it's just they seem so like tired. I don't know. But I could be wrong. But getting to the point, sorry, I watch a lot of cartoons. My absolute favorite cartoon, not just right now airing, but maybe ever made at this point, like it's just shot past everything that was kind of at the top of my list for the longest time. Steven Universe is like now my favorite cartoon ever made if it continues to be this good. It's everything I ever wanted in a show like that. I love the art design, the music. That's something that also gets neglected a lot of the time is sound use and music, and it's really smart in Steven Universe, and it's really adorable and fun to listen to. Every character is fucking great. Even the annoying, like, main kid character, Steven, is kind of the best character in the show, although that's hard to say because all of them are great. The writing is really funny. Like, there's the birthdays episode where Steven tries to throw a birthday party for the Crystal Gems, who are these magical girls that have raised him. Had me laughing, like, continuously for 8 minutes straight, and then the last 2 minutes being absolutely mortified, which is the best thing when you can take, like, this huge disparity of emotional reactions to something, like, have you laughing, then immediately have you crying, like, the best stuff, I think, does that. And that was that episode, along with several others. And I don't know, that show is solid gold. Like, if anybody's not watching Steven Universe because the ads for it are awful, because the ads for it are awful, marketing is not good for that show. But if anybody's watching either because the ads or because it's a kid show or whatever, like, just don't skip out on it. That show is fucking great. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's on my list. I'm kind of waiting for it to show up on Netflix so I can binge watch it.
Right.
Yeah, me too. Oh, that you also brought up when you said kid show, another one that I watch, and that's I think the second season's supposed to be coming out sometime this year. I'm not sure. Gravity Falls is
a good
show.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Thoroughly enjoyable.
Yes.
Yeah, I enjoyed what I saw of that. I didn't watch too much of it. I think I saw like four or five of them and said this is fun, and then didn't watch more. I'll get back to it at some point.
Yeah, most I think you could distill it down to being a fun show, and then it has some standout, clever, fun show episodes within it. I certainly think the pinnacle was probably the video game one that they did, which was pretty great. They had the Scott Pilgrim video game guys, I believe.
Yeah.
Do the art for that episode, which was really neat. And I always like their like little zingers at the end, and they make really good like song ditties, little earworms occasionally, which I like. They did a boy band one, which was classic. I might have put that as my cell phone ringtone for a little bit. I took it off because I became embarrassed, but hey.
Right. Yeah. so I'm with Hope on Steven Universe. I think that's... if you like Utena, watch Steven Universe, which is a weird thing to say, but it's totally true. Yeah, that's like the best show, American cartoon. I mean, I hate to put it in this... Like, to me, it seems unfair to be like, for kids. No, it's actually just a good show. Like, it doesn't, I don't need to put it in that ghetto of, like, a kid's show. It's just really good, especially if you like anime. But, that, I really like Rick and Morty. That show took a little while to grow on me, but eventually it did, and, I really like that show a lot. I think I've seen most of the episodes at this point. I think that's the show Dan Harmon should have been making anyway. Like, it seems like that's the show. Like, Community's done, and it's officially done at this point. Yes. It's been canceled. but that fifth season of Community was kind of like, you're making this other show that seems like it's way more up your alley. Like, you can do whatever the hell you want in this other thing, and it's a huge success. Like, Cartoon Network will never cancel Rick and Morty. Yeah. That'll be on forever, because it does crazy numbers. Like, that's where he belongs. So it totally seems like that's sort of his thing. So those two, other American animation on TV, not much. I mean, I'm kind of done with Adventure Time at this point.
Yeah.
I liked it for a while, but it's not trying too hard to be funny anymore. So I'm kind of done with it.
I liked Adventure Time a lot. Like, it took a lot to break me of it. It took an entire, I would say, the fifth season had a couple fun episodes, and then the rest was just so negligible, and it took that much to break me of it. But they had a big two-parter recently, and as of that big two-parter, I said, I'm done, and now there's more of it on the DVR. And usually I watch it, like, the Monday or the Tuesday that is on the DVR. Now I'm just letting it pile up. I'm probably just going to lead it off. I'm like, it's been enough. Like, I think I'm done with Adventure Time. It's just not fun. It's not fun anymore. So
it never really hooked me. I'm going to watch that Misaki Yuasa episode.
Oh yeah, I should probably just to see it, because that's such a weird thing. But that's about it.
Yeah,
I never started watching that. That seemed to be one of those ones that got rammed down my throat to watch. And I never got around to it, and now it's to that point where the hype has died down. It's really only being, like, touted by people on Tumblr, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
It passed me by, and I'm okay with that.
Well, it's all up its own ass with lore and stuff at this point, so I'm just kind of done with it. Hey, it has, like, three seasons of really, really funny shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
stuff
that would just make me laugh like crazy. The first, like, three, even four seasons of Adventure Time have some episodes in there that are so funny and crazy and weird, and they were great. Mm-hmm. And now I watch it, and I'm like, okay. You know, I'm not sitting here saying, like, oh, this show's fucking trash now. It's just like, I don't need my kids' show to be all serious and lore-y. I don't need it. But I linked this on Twitter, and it's out there, and I've linked it a few times. But if you get a chance, check out The Begun of Tigtone on YouTube. It's super fucking weird and crazy and gross. And check it out. It's sort of like a pilot film for, like, a movie. I think they're kickstarting it. But it's neat. It's got Bill Corbett and Mike from Red Letter Media in it. And it's pretty sweet. So check it out. Super fucking weird. Like, I was very taken with it. And I've seen it, like, a few times now, which is weird for me to watch anything more than once at this point. But yeah, really bizarre. Totally recommended. The Begun of Tigtone. Check it out. All right, moving on. Ronan Willis asks, what's the deal with all the incest in anime lately?
Seriously, man. It is kind of strange, isn't it?
That's like a Seinfeld joke. What's the deal with... Yeah. It's even in non-fan service anime like The Pilot's Love Song. It's just sort of the fetish du jour, right? I mean...
Yeah.
Like, before...
It's even in a show that I'm enjoying quite a bit, Chaika. You know, the Chaika the Coffin Princess.
That one's...
The main character, you know, has... Yeah. But the main character has a foster sister, and she's kind of sweet on him, and it's not that creepy, but it's still, it's just like, did you really have to employ that? Did you feel like it was necessary to do that?
Yeah, I'm totally cool with the Chaika one, because the way that the relationship... To me, it's less about, incest, and more about, like, what devices are they using, and Chaika doesn't use any of the... the typical incest, like...
Yeah, it's true. It doesn't. I guess I'm just bothered by the fact that I feel like the author of the novels, I'm assuming that's from the novels, too, felt like that was something that, well, I guess I have to go there a little.
Maybe. I don't know if it was just a coincidence. The fact is they call each other sister and brother just because they've been raised together for so long, but they not only make it clear, oh, we're not related just as a, like, as a, oh, it's okay. It's not that. It's that their relationship is... They call each other sister and brother because they treat each other like a sister and brother. They're really mean and dismissive to one another, and it's not like, oh, my Nissan, I am jealous of you being around other women. It's, she, like, beats him up and berates him and talks about the dumb shit he did as a kid in front of other people, and, like, it seems like a brother-sister relationship, but they're also open. It's mutual. It's not, oh, I'm clueless that my sister likes me. It's a mutual, like, they have feelings for each other, too, because... It's kind of like the whole Eren and Mikasa thing. People are like, is Eren and Mikasa incest? No, they have lived together for 2 years, and she was adopted in the family when she's like 10 because her parents died. What the hell? Like, it's not the same thing at all. And this seemed like exactly like that, so I'm...
That's a good comparison. I guess I was just jumping to conclusions there.
Well, it's easy to jump to conclusions, because that shit's everywhere. And it's
like the trope is short. Yeah, exactly.
But yeah,
I think it's honestly, like, to me it just seems like it's the fetish du jour. Like, before it was cat girls, now it's maids, or then it was maids, now it's incest. So
now it's your little sister.
Either it's gonna be another character type or some other taboo thing that people are like, well, it's blowing your mind with how taboo it is or whatever. I think the next thing is Monster Girls. Like, that has to start showing up in anime really fast. Like,
that's right. Aren't there a couple of successful manga that use
extremely
that?
Extremely successful manga. So yeah. Monster Girls, I think, is the next thing. So, like, that seems like it's the next thing. I could be wrong. I'm just trying to predict based on, like, the kind of material I see out there and what seems to be selling. That sort of thing. But it could also be like, oh, incest isn't going far enough. Now it's got to be... I don't know, eating shit or something. I have no idea what the next thing is.
It's just,
poop eating.
But look, this is a medium that sometimes that takes this fetishy shit to its extreme, as far as they can push it in late night television. I mean, who knows? Who knows where it's gonna go? Like, would you have been able to say, like, oh, you know what? 5 years from now, a lot of anime is going to be about really wanting to fuck your little sister.
Mm-hmm.
Like, would you have been able to call that? Mike,
I would not be here if I could.
I'm just kind of contemplating. I mean, I don't know. I feel like you could see the outline of that when stuff like Sister Princess was coming out. That thing is like 10 or 12 years old now.
I guess you're right. You know what? I guess you're right. And we're not like seeing like a bunch of stuff that's hinting at shit eating. So, you know, but I think it's maybe Monster Girls or some other fucking fetish. I don't know. It seems like that's a thing, and then they'll move past that, and then something else will become popular, and that's just kind of what happens. Like, it's a very sexualized medium, so, you know, there's got to be something new every couple of years. Sweet Durga asks, how have your anime viewing habits changed now that basically everything is on streaming sites like Crunchyroll?
It's wonderful. I have, you know, stuff that isn't exactly appointment television, but is kind of close. Like, we're recording this on a Thursday. Today was Ping Pong Day. Tomorrow's going to be JoJo's and Mushishi Day. You know, I like having that, you know, that kind of stuff in my...
I like to call it the JoJoshi Power Hour.
That's a good way of putting it.
You get burned, you get, like, fired up, and then you chillax right after.
That's true. But I mean, on the flip side, it's like, it spoils you, because this season is a particularly strong one, so I have things to watch every single day except for Sundays and Mondays. So those are like the barren wasteland where it's just like, ugh, no new anime to watch today.
Am I watching Haikyuu?
It's late night Saturdays. I there have been times when I've watched that at like 4 o'clock in the morning because I just happen to have been up. But yeah, you're right about that. Okay, so it's really just Mondays.
Sunday to me, I guess.
Yeah, but anyway, yeah, I have like been at work on a Monday and just, ugh, I'm not going to be able to watch anything new when I get home. Oh, well.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the neatest thing. Like, you can actually program your week Like your weekly entertainment. You can sit there and say, well, Monday's this show, Tuesday's these two, Wednesday's these two. Like, that's a neat thing, and we get everything now. Mm-hmm. You know, everything worthwhile, we get it. Well, not everything, but we get 95% of everything. And that's incredible. That's incredible. Like, I can't eat, like, if you'd have went back 15 years and told me 15 years ago, this is what it's going to look like in 15 years, I would have been like, no fucking way. Are you kidding? No way are we going to have the access to all of that stuff. For, you know, and what Crunchyroll, what does Crunchyroll charge? $8 a month?
Yeah.
You know, like, for that. Like, that's
I love that I have Twitter buddies in Japan who at 11:30 a.m. my time will be like, watch JoJo's. And then at 12:30 p.m. my time, I'm like, okay, it's my turn to watch JoJo's. It's a 1 hour turnaround. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing.
And then after that person from the future shows you what streaming's like going to be like in 15 years, they're like, hey, look at this. Let's watch this recently My Sister is Unusual thing.
Oh.
Burn it down.
I guess it has... I have a Crunchyroll membership and everything, and I don't actually use it that much. It hasn't really impacted my... like, I don't have any real appointment television watching. I'm still very old school in that. Like, I buy a bunch of things, but what I do, how it has affected me is that everything ends up on Twitter, and I get to see people's reactions to it. I have a heavily curated Twitter feed, so basically my shopping list is made by Twitter pretty easily. And, you know, most of these things get bought up by, you know, Funimation or Sentai or somebody, and usually I wait until I can just binge watch them with a dub or something, which is really nice, because I'm glad those days where I spent hours and hours of trying to get one single four-episode DVD for a really shitty ending of Trinity Blood is over. never forget. I watch a few things, like Attack on Titan. I went on to Crunchyroll and I binge-watched that just because I got so heavily inundated to watch that. And I was glad I did. But as far as being on the cutting edge, I'm usually not. And I just, but I, it's a great tool to see as far as a barometer of what I'm going to buy in about 6 months. That's how I use it.
Yeah, I prefer to watch stuff on Blu-ray, you know, all at once, like in big chunks. I definitely prefer that. But, you know, the fact that I can basically go into any season and say, like, I want to catch up on this, and I can. I don't have to, like, download a bunch of shit. I can just go to the site and watch it. Mm-hmm. Like, that's great. It's fantastic. Like, we live in an absolute golden age for anime fans. Like, you have everything you could possibly want at your fingertips, unless you're into really weird old stuff or, like, Pretty Cure.
Really weird old stuff. No, we're getting that stuff, too. It's really just Pretty Cure that...
it's just Pretty Cure. Just those guys are fun.
To make the million-dollar deal that will get Pretty Cure to all the fans around the world.
Yeah, right.
I mean, like, a recent example of...
And they make so much money on that.
Yeah. A recent example of how I use Crunchyroll was, so I've been really big into Gen-Urobuchi, and I asked my Twitter followers if I should take the plunge to get Fate Zero box sets, which are a lot of money. Yeah. And somebody said on my feed, go to Crunchyroll, watch the first episode. If you get through that and you're interested, get the whole thing, because you will love it. And I watched it on Crunchyroll, which was awesome, and then I got the DVD sets right away, the Blu-ray sets, and then, I burned through them. And it's one of my favorite shows that I've seen in a long, long time. It's nice that I can... If I want a preview, or if I'm if people have reservations on recommending something to me, I can still go out and see, legally go and see its, you know, professionally subbed episode. Or I could watch the whole thing if I wanted to. And I can do that for $8, which is awesome. And I don't think there's any, in my mass consumerism, there is nothing else like it, as far as a model is concerned, as far as my consumer model of how I buy things. I have no equal to it. It only happens in anime, and it's weird because it's the most effective because I spend the most money on buying anime Blu-rays. So it's working for me.
All right. Let's move on here. We got Daro Q asking, with Attack on Titan and Toonami, what's the next best fit for them to bring over? In parentheses, Tiger and Bunny. Tiger and Bunny's done. It's come and gone. There is no next best fit. We just started the biggest hit that we've seen in years and years and years. Now,
yeah, Attack on Titan.
I think asking now, like, what's next is, okay, let's, that's like saying, like, let's talk about the 2016 presidential election right now. Stop. Yeah. Just enjoy. We have a giant hit. It's a big deal. Things are great. Just enjoy it. Maybe there will be another big show, like, next year or something, or maybe later this year. Who knows? But, man, let's not start worrying about the next thing already. Let's just enjoy this thing we got, you know.
Well, the next thing is going to be Sailor Moon, right? Isn't Sailor Moon going to be the next big thing that they would probably want to bring to Toonami?
I don't know.
No. Toonami? I don't know. None of us have seen that show, so we don't know what it's like. But
well, Sailor Moon didn't have quite the same crossover impact. I mean, the thing is, in Japan, Attack on Titan is being compared to Evangelion. That's how broad the audience is for it over there.
Yeah. Like, in 10 years, we're probably going to see reboot movies and shit.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's something that everyone is watching. And over here, I feel like it's something that a lot of people are watching, too. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but when I boot up Netflix now, I always see that show in, like, right in the top five of popular shows on Netflix.
Yeah, it's usually in there.
Yeah, that's very interesting to me.
Yeah, my non-anime friends are getting into it, which is saying something.
I mean, I'm happy that it's a good thing. It's not just like a super popular thing. It's like a good thing too.
Yeah,
that's a question we can ask in a few years' time. I don't think we're going to have a hit on that level immediately.
No, but another big thing was Space Dandy, and I'm really, really happy about
that. Super happy with Space Dandy.
nothing. Like I have not been that happy with a show in a long time. Like it hits so many personal buttons for me.
Yeah.
That it makes me very pleased that A, it was a big success, and B, I get more of it. Like so happy about that.
QT, ending it on the QT episode, or ending the first half in the QT episode was a good move on their part. QT is definitely the best approach. More QT.
Yeah. Alright. Torchica asks, best anime you've seen this year? I think I just gave my answer, so Mike, what about you?
Goodness me. Well, I mean, Space Dandy would have to be right up there to put a little separation in. Now that it is streaming legally on Crunchyroll, I'm all in on the Cult of JoJo's. Binge the heck out of the first season. It's kind of rough in the animation front, but it's very entertaining all the way through. And the new series, Stardust Crusaders, is just, that hits every mark. It's entertaining. It's completely over the top. It's absurd. It's delightful. And it even looks good.
Can I ask?
I'm really enjoying it.
Can I ask? I haven't started that yet, but that was the one show that, you know, being inundated with, I am going to watch on Crunchyroll. Do I need to start with the first season, or can I just jump in with the pristine and nice and clean second?
Yeah, well, a lot of people will tell you that the first part of the first season, like the first 8 episodes, which is subtitled Crimson Blood, isn't really essential, and you should just start with Battle Tendency. I agree that Crimson Blood isn't that essential, but no, you should just watch all of it. It's you know, even Crimson Blood is not bad. It's pretty good. I'm sorry, Phantom Blood.
So, I just want to point out, so JoJo's is a really long series. Like, that manga goes on and on and on and on and on. And if the intention is to keep doing the manga, keep going, you can get in now on JoJo's when it's at barely 26, 28 episodes, however many. I think there's like six episodes of season three out. So you're in... You're in the shallow end,
right?
On something that could, you're in the shallow end on something that could run forever. If you get in now and you start watching it every week, you're at the beginning. So you may as well go. Like, you may as well start if you're interested. If it doesn't capture you, it doesn't capture you. But if your time commitment on this is pretty low compared to, say, like, I kind of want to get into One Piece. Good luck.
And the other advantage to JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is it's not so much a continuing series as it is it's these series of long story arcs that are just loosely connected. So you absolutely could just start with series two and enjoy it quite a bit. I just think series one is very rewarding.
Okay.
Yeah, but again, you're not talking about much. You're talking about 26 episodes. You know,
that's true.
You know, leave it on in the background and catch it up every now and then. Like, the show doesn't move that fast, so, you know.
I think it depends on how nitpicky you are. I still can't really... I mean, Stardust Crusaders is the part that everybody remembers. Like, that's the one that when they were making those OVAs in the 90s, they were like, yes, we will do this part, because it's just the it's the best part. So, and David Productions' handling of it is like, hey, this looks not like crap, because the first JoJo's series that David Productions did, it doesn't look good. It looks really rough. So, I mean, like, I actually kind of, I disagree with Mike. I think if you really just want to go in full hog and enjoy and, like, get the full thing start to where it is now, then you can start with the first series. But if you just want to start having fun right away, you're not going to have any trouble understanding it. You just start with Stardust Crusaders. That's what I would recommend. I mean, that's I first started enjoying JoJo's and going, oh man, this is fucking great, when I saw the OVAs in the 90s, which are not anywhere near as good as what this new series is doing. But I still enjoyed those, and that was just Stardust Crusaders without even bothering to explain very much. So, I mean, like, yeah, I think if you want to, you can definitely just start with the juicy stuff. If you want to, like, go back and look at the beginning first, however, that's there. I don't think it's nearly as fun.
Yeah, I've seen the OVAs, and to their detriment, they are kind of deadly serious. One of the wonderful things about the TV series from David Production is it has a very good sense of absurdity. It kind of revels in it, and I think that's important.
Yeah, I didn't realize how important it was, because it's still funny. Like, all the same stuff is still happening. It's just, it takes itself seriously in the OVA, so it's still funny. Like, just the things that are happening are funny just by virtue of seeing them, but giving it that little cheeky self-awareness doesn't make it actively funnier in the new series. So yeah.
All right, and also let's not forget.
Yes, that's great.
I'm going to start going to Bangles reunion concerts in JoJo's cosplay.
Oh, go ahead, Hope.
Oh, no, it was just the best stuff I've seen this year is Space Dandy, JoJo's, Haikyuu, which is just a sports show, but it looks really good. Like, so I think all of these things, yeah, all four of these things are, like, largely visual-based. Like, they're well-written, but it's also like, hey, look at this. This looks really great. Haikyuu looks awesome. Like, it's just a sports manga, but, like, the animation of the action scenes is so good, and the comic timing is so excellent. It's not like, haha, look at this wacky anime comedy that doesn't really play. Like, it's really funny, laugh-out-loud funny, and the characters are likable. And that goes a long way with me, so I'm enjoying Haikyuu. And also, Mushishi Season 2 is really, really good. Like, I liked the first season, but, like, it seems like with Season 2, they've, like, taken the cream off the top of those manga stories and, like, picked the best ones, because for, like, six episodes now, it's been solid gold. It's been, like, the best episodes of the first season. So, yeah, I mean, like, if you were a little iffy on Mushishi before or whatever, because it's slow, and it's not good to marathon, like, don't try to marathon it. That's probably not gonna do well for you. But, But I mean, like, it's really, really good stuff, and it's gotten a lot better with the second season. So, yeah, I mean, that's all the best stuff I've seen this year.
Yeah, the two things, I guess, the thing that came out this year, if we're just going to keep it at that, it would be Space Dandy. But all I already talked about Fate Zero, and it's easily, yeah, the Fate Zero and Space Dandy.
Okay, switching gears, Rogue of Space asks, have you read any works by Terry Pratchett? If so, what are your thoughts on him as a fantasy author? Geez, I think I read, that's the Discworld guy, right?
Yes.
Yep, sure is.
I think I read one or two of those books when I was a kid, and I played the PC game, which also came out on the original PlayStation. I'm old. Anyway, I don't know. I don't remember much about it other than it's sort of like this, like, the Discworld stuff is sort of this droll kind of British sense of humor, but also takes itself a little seriously and also runs forever kind of a thing. I have no interest in revisiting it now. I zero interest. Anyone else have any Terry Pratchett opinions?
Yeah, I mean, my favorite Terry Pratchett book is actually the book that he co-wrote with Neil Gaiman, Good Omens, which I found at a dollar store.
That's very good.
Yeah, but yeah, that's very enjoyable and humorous and weird. But the Discworld books, I got through about 7 or 8 of them.
That's a lot.
They're pleasant, small gods, and it's about religion, and that's pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a limit of how much of that I can take, you know?
But you know what? I think Good Omens is one of those things where it's like, I don't think I've ever met anyone who's read that didn't really like it. And also, why is there not a movie of it?
Well, I feel, hasn't the movie kind of been in development hell for years? Because I feel like that's something that's been discussed.
Like, since the 80s.
Yeah,
I don't really read fantasy fiction anymore. I read a lot of crime fiction, and then I read a lot of nonfiction. And that's been my way since, like, high school. So, sorry.
I read Terry Pratchett stuff, like, only very recently. Like, somebody recommended me read some of his stuff. And just, like, 2 years ago, maybe, read Terry Pratchett books. And I made it through, like, 1.5 of the Discworld stuff. And he's mostly... He's a little Douglas Adamsy in appeal. Not in actual style, but in appeal. Like, what kind of person it appeals to. And I'm not really... I don't know. Like, it doesn't really do much for me. It's mostly witty and mostly like, aha, this is sort of like another thing you know of, but it's twisted a little bit and it's a little witty. And I'm like, eh, like, that's not really, it doesn't really play with me. So, it's okay. Like, he's okay. The problem is, Terry Pratchett's fine. Like, his stuff is fine. It appeals to a certain kind of fan. The fans of it, like, can be really annoying. So I think it traipses over a lot into Anglophile territory, unfortunately. So a lot of, like, people that are really major, obnoxious, dramatic Anglophiles will be like, Terry Pratchett, and it's like, yeah, okay. So I mean, like, so that's an unfortunate side effect, is like the fandom is sort of actively a little, you know, to enjoying it. But he's okay.
Yeah, Anglophiles kind of ruin a lot of that stuff for me, because they just, if it has accents, they like it, and it's really a turnoff. Like, oh, they're talking like this, and like it's this weird, like, sort of annoying, like, theatrical nerd voice that they really get into, and just it turns me off. I like that Tia Booze.
That's very good. I'm going to remember that one.
That's a good one. Yeah, the Anglophile stuff, like, I don't just like something because it's British. Like, it's also got to be good. And a lot of people, like, a lot of nerds seem to just like something because it's British and kind of, and it's trying really hard to be witty, and that's it. That's all it takes. Anyway. All right, Dusty Cram Cram asks, what do you think you'd be doing if you weren't working in anime journalism or criticism? I guess this is mostly for myself and Hope here, since neither of you do it really for a living.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what I would be doing. I would imagine, like, my career trajectory would have worked out, like, I would have I would like to think I would have had some mild, extremely mild success writing about movies until the bottom fell out of that about however many years ago. And then I would wonder what to do with myself. But, you know, I've moved so far into editorial management at this point that now that's my line of work. Mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't apply to work somewhere as a writer. I would apply somewhere in editorial management. That's where I would go. That's my line of work. So I guess, you know, assuming that things wouldn't be all that different if I were writing about anything other than anime, yeah, I'd probably be managing a freelance team somewhere. I don't know. That's sort of what I'm good at, so... I don't know. Hope?
I don't know, no comment. Like, it's too convoluted, so... Like, basically, my like, writing about anime and doing videos about anime kind of ties into huge decisions throughout my life, so there's not really any way to, like, parse it apart. Probably my life would be very different. I don't know, better or worse, I have no idea. But very different, definitely.
Yeah, very different. Okay. Okay. Scotty415 asks, this is for Hope and I again, what's one anime movie or show one of you loves, but the other one hates? I feel like there's an easy answer to this.
Goof Troop.
I wish that I could turn back time. No, I don't hate that show. I don't hate it. I just hate the ending. I hate the last third of that show. That's all.
You're talking about...
I was talking about Evangelion, but I thought that was the easiest.
Well, yeah, I mean, I love that show sort of unconditionally, and you obviously don't. Mm-hmm. I know you don't hate it, but we sure do love to argue about it. That's
right. It's more entertaining to argue about it. I don't have like that strong personal connection to it, so I'm, I guess, less. You know, like, I'm a little bit more cold on it, so it's easier for me to bitch, I guess.
Movie you love that I hate, I guess, would be, I don't know, you like a lot more actor-y stuff than I do.
Well, what's something specific, like?
So, we recently watched Kenneth Branagh's Much Ado About Nothing, and I found it really obnoxious.
Uh-huh.
And you clearly was very much in love with it. And I was like, this is fucking bullshit actor wank.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was very irritated with it, but you totally loved it. I was not so enamored with it, but...
Right.
You know, the fun thing is that generally, like, when you really like talking about this stuff,
mm-hmm.
when one person really dislikes it and the other person really likes it, that's fantastic, because then you get to sit there and hash it out.
Right, yeah. Like, so long as you're, like, not... weirdly obsessive with or like my feelsy about a thing, and you realize person's just trying to like connect with you on something and isn't trying to berate you, then you're, you know, then it's good.
Yeah, that's always the most, you know? Always the most fun. Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of something that you like that I like hate, but I can't think
aside
of
aside from Goof Troop.
Well, yeah, I mean, but I was trying to think of like an actual movie and like I'm not coming up with much. I mean, like, I feel like the stuff that you're able to connect with more that I kind of shut down on is like some like mean-spirited comedy stuff. I get really dodgy about stuff that's really harsh comedy. And
can you think of an example?
I'm trying. Like, I'm like, oh, shit.
Observe and report.
I haven't seen that, so.
Oh
well, we gotta fix that.
I haven't seen that. Maybe. I don't know. Like, maybe. Oh, right, he loves MacGruber, and I fucking hate that movie.
Oh, yeah.
So...
Can you believe this fucking monster doesn't love MacGruber?
I just don't think it's funny. I think it's men acting like children comedy, and they're like, that has to be really funny to work, and it's like, oh my god, it's another fucking guy who's 30-something, acts like he has 2 brain cells, isn't that funny, and that's the joke, and it's like, oh god, like...
Yes,
so
it is
dumb
funny.
With that. So dumb with it. MacGruber's not funny. Like, Anchorman's funny. Anchorman 2 is funny. MacGruber's not funny at all. Like, I just, so there you go. There's something.
Justin was the one that told me he wanted to light my copy of Observe and Report on fire and throw it into the street. He hated that movie. I love it. I think it's great. But it's also, like, the darkest comedy ever made. Like, it's,
that's deliciously uncomfortable. Yeah, that's great.
It's barely a comedy.
Like, and we both like Tarantino. We both like Wes Anderson. He just likes both of those more than I do. But we both like both of those directors. So I mean, like, it's just like minor things.
Yeah, it's little stuff like that.
So for me, it's like theatery shit and camp. Like, we both like camp, but I like some really lame garbage. And as far as the campy stuff, and for him, it's like harsher, I guess, stuff or just comedies that I don't get. I don't know. So there you go.
Have you guys seen Happiness? What about Happiness by Todd Solondz? Or
I have not seen it.
Yeah, I mean, well, she hasn't seen it. I Todd Solondz is one of those, like, I'll watch his movies once. And Happiness is, well, it's special.
Well, that's the one I go to most often when I go, say, I'm going to watch a Todd Solondz film. And it's right up there with Observe and Report as far as being barely a comedy. it's funny in a very special way, but okay. I also wanted to kick in here and say I'm with Hope here. I don't find that MacGruber that funny.
Yeah, all right.
We have no souls apparently.
It was already a fact.
I will stand by her on this, and I'll just say that I sometimes find that stuff funny, but in that case, no. Sorry.
Mike, you were saying?
I was saying, I'm on Team Zach with MacGruber. I saw that in theaters, laughed my ass off. I mean, the thing is, I do not feel the need to watch that ever again, but no, I saw it in theaters.
The lions have been drawn.
Theaters laughed a lot.
Wait, I think I put Hot Rod on, and you were also like, what the fuck is this?
No. That must have been
such a strange movie. That is such a peculiar movie.
Yeah, right. Well, I like that sort of thing.
I've seen Hot Rod. I don't have a problem with that.
Oh, okay.
But I don't think we watched it, so if you put it on somebody else, like...
Uh-oh. Now I'm in trouble. okay. My anime waifu asks... What is it about Imaishi's works that create such militant fan bases?
I don't know, man. Is there a militant fan base of Dead Leaves? I wish there was, but I don't think there is.
Gainax. I don't think it's Imaishi. I think it's Gainax.
Yeah, I actually would agree with you. I don't think it's Imaishi.
I agree with Hope, too, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, then how would you explain Kill la Kill?
It's Gainax. It's Studio Trigger.
Yeah.
It's Gainax.
It's ex-Gainax, folks. Mm-hmm. It's also Gurren Lagann.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People really like that style, and also that show is really exciting and cool. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, exciting and cool those are good things to have in your TV show. Yeah. It's also a way to get people to really like your shit and follow what you do. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Who would have thought?
Yeah. EgaKiar444 asks, have either of you watched all of Princess Jellyfish? We both have. Mm-hmm. If so, thoughts? I did a whole podcast on that when it came out, shortly after it came out. Not a whole podcast. I think we did about 20 minutes on it a while ago. I really liked that show. I wanted to see more of it, but it...
obviously didn't do well.
At the same time, I'm okay with it, where it ended, and it's... I'm just happy it got made and it exists, and we have a copy on the shelf, and that's it. You know, then it's fine. I don't need more. I'm happy it got made, but that is a really good show.
Yeah, I actually watched it recently and thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, I really loved it. I thought it was really good. But I'm the same with Zach. I'm glad I have it on my shelf, and if I ever feel the need to go back to it, I have the 12 episodes or whatnot to go back to, and that's all I need, really.
We're just going to take your questions from the chat now. So, sorry to people whose questions we missed from Twitter, but we did say we were going to take questions from the chat. So, go ahead and throw them out, and we'll get to them. Okay, Laddie64 asks, besides harems and boys' love, do you think there are anime subgenres that tend to be gender-biased? Examples, mostly guy cast on mecha shows.
Interesting question.
I mean, I think like anything, they cast a demographic for all the
reasons. Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that I find kind of interesting about Haikyuu is because before that show came out, like the quintessential volleyball anime shows were both girl shows. It was Attack Number One and Attacker U. And those were both about women's volleyball.
And yet all the, okay, not all, but like all but two or three of the people that I know that are watching Haikyuu are girls. They're like, this is great.
Well, Haikyuu definitely has like that neo shonen thing where it's structured like a shonen series, but all the dudes are kind of pretty, and you know they each have the specific personality type.
Mm-hmm. I don't know about pretty, like they're not pretty, but they're.
Oh, I think like they are.
I disagree. I mean, like they're cute, like puppy dogs. Like people get moe over the girls get moe over them because they're cute, like. Doggies or puppies, and they're played for laughs, and you know, I guess some fangirls want them to bone each other. I don't know, but you know, it's that kind of thing.
I don't know. In terms of like, it kind of depends on what you mean by gender bias, you know. Mm-hmm. That's sort of a it's a term that's hard to clarify there. Okay. Aquadraka asks, will Aemon cover the Kill la Kill event at AX? We'll try. We will try. In terms of coverage, like, unless they let us stream it live, which they won't, what are we going to do? Like, write it up, and then this guy came out, and then that guy came out, and then we can't take any photos, so here's a description of what I saw on stage. Yeah, we could do that, I guess, but, I don't know, like, coverage of that stuff when there's no video or photos allowed, which there likely will not be, that's one of those things where, you know, it's like, oh, are you gonna cover the Miku concert? How? Mm-hmm. We can't do anything in there. We can't do anything that would let you see anything. So it's tough. We'll give it a shot. We'll at least have someone write up their impressions of it, if not like a full-on like review of the material.
I'm a little curious about the way that it's a ticketed event, which is not, but it sounds like they're going to be selling tickets for it for money, which traditionally that's one of those things where it's like, well, wait a minute, doesn't the badge pay for that?
They've done it before. It's not the first time AX has done it.
Interesting. Okay, I've never seen a separate admission price for something like that myself.
Yeah, they've charged for other events before, and there was a big uproar, and I guess either people have short memories, or something. But it's definitely happened before. my strongest memory of this is when every concert-ish event was ticketed had a hard ticket. And you had to go wait in front of the LA Live box office to get tickets to the AX things. And I would walk past trash cans, and trash cans was like, at some point, trash cans became the place where people would leave stacks of tickets they had gotten to some of those events because there wasn't high demand for them. So people would go up to the box office and say, okay, give me 8 tickets for this. And they would get the 8 tickets. So like, I would walk past a trash can and they would be like, Vic Mignogna live in concert, like 4 tickets just sitting there on the trash can. You know, stuff like that where it's like, you know, sort of a minor event that normally would just happen like on a stage in the convention center and it really wouldn't be a big deal. But the hard ticket thing turned it into like this big event. You got to show up and line up and get tickets and then wait in line to get in. And like, you know, turning that into a bigger thing than it actually is kind of turned it, like made it a little funny. So, I this Kill la Kill thing, like, they're treating it, I would imagine they're treating it sort of like Miku. So, you know, charging extra for it is not unheard of, so, whatever. We'll see how it goes. I doubt they will... actually, that's probably a good point. I doubt they will have press seating, so we'll have to pay for people to get in and write up their impressions. Okay. Grooven asks... For Hope, I heard you're an Angel Beats fan. Are you at all interested in the visual novels that are coming out?
Well, the trick is, when they come out, they won't be in English, so I can't... What am I to do, you know? But, I mean, if they were in English, I would be very interested. I like that show, but the biggest problem with it is it's obviously truncated. It's obviously... Whoops, you have half the episode count that you had, like, initially thought you had in planning. Which, you know, that's not just speculation at this point. It was actually, like, later revealed that that was what happened. It's like, they gave us a 26-episode run, and then early in planning, they took that away. So we had to truncate everything. And that's the major problem with that show, but I do really like it. I like that I can't remember his last name, but Jun-san, who does all that key stuff. I mean, I like that that seems to be his first real foray into developing, like, real characters that feel like people and not just, like, fuckable stereotypes for dudes, you know, which I think he had good intentions with that stuff. Like, Aaron Cannon are mostly just uncomfortable because of the audience. They're not uncomfortable necessarily because of the content. And, like, I appreciate how human Angel Beats was while still being very anime, so, yeah, I would be really happy with a visual novel that explains more about the characters that we didn't really get to meet. So that would be really nice. Like, more of that, because it got taken out of the show because there wasn't time for it. And that's a shame, because it's a character-driven show. So, you know.
Okay, a lot of people asking, Mike, they saying they enjoyed your commentary on Lupin the Third, Bye Bye Lady Liberty. Want to know if you have plans on doing more.
Well, thank you for the compliments. Reed Nelson and I have done a commentary for Lupin the Third, the Hemingway Papers, which comes out, right around now. Like, I just got my contributor copy, so that just came out. In addition to that, I do a commentary for Ringing Bell, which is going to be out in a couple of months. And I'm in talks to do some more stuff like that, but nothing is definite yet, so I can't talk about it. But there's definitely likely to be some more of that stuff down the road, and I'll be talking about it when it comes along. So thanks.
Okay. Let's see here. Any particular opinions on Patema Inverted or Time of Eve? So I feel bad about this. I've never seen Time of Eve. I know I should. I know everyone talks about how great it is. I've never seen it. I should. Anybody else?
I haven't seen Patema Inverted. I'm really fond of Time of Eve, and I'm looking forward to the Kickstarter project finally yielding that fruit. And I'm looking forward to Patema Inverted. It's the director obviously has a lot of talent, and I'm curious to see what he does next. But Time of Eve is very interesting. It's good science fiction. It's solidly written. It's very good looking. A good looking piece of animation too. So that's absolutely worth looking at.
Yeah, I haven't seen Time of Eve, but I'm looking forward to it. But that's about as far as I got on this.
All right. Shazari asks, you think Sunrise will ever release new Gundam series, Gundam Build Fighters, or anything else moving forward, stateside in the future? Well, here's the thing about that. Sunrise doesn't know what to do with Gundam in the West at this point. They shut down Bandai, and, you know, well, okay, Sunrise didn't shut down Bandai, but...
Yeah, the Bandai Namco business unit directors shut down Bandai Entertainment.
And
there was a vice president at BAMCO who said something to aggressively push some of their IP in the West again. So maybe something will happen. I mean, the thing is, if you talk to someone who works on the Gundam committee now about, like, are we going to see any more Gundam in North America? They would almost certainly tell you, well, you can watch Build Fighters on YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, we're doing that. Their strategy in recent years has not made a lot of sense to me, and I wouldn't get your hopes up too high, but we'll see.
Yeah. That's a real tough one. That's a real tough one. I kind of wish that the fate of that series were, like, in terms of coming out on... Because this is what people are talking about, is coming out on DVD dubbed in the West. It's not certain, and I think, honestly, if somebody were to tell me, like, oh, I'm starting up a company, I paid all this money, we licensed Gundam for DVD and Blu-ray release with dubs, I would say, how much money do you have, and are you prepared to lose most of it? Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't seem like a smart decision. It just doesn't. Like, it never sold very well here. Like, ever. Like,
Gundam Wing.
Yeah, okay, right. And somebody would be really smart to relicense that and put that one out.
Yep.
Because it's got a nostalgia market that's huge. But that's it. That's fucking it. Like, there's nothing else. Like, it would be a foolish choice if your interest was making money. Mm-hmm. To release more Gundam on DVD and Blu-ray. Like, you know, Gundam Unicorn's doing well for itself, as near as anyone can tell. And that's it. That's it. Like, anything else moving forward is... it's a gigantic question mark, and most of the time it hasn't done very well. And so, yeah. Eh, well. Sailor Trafalmador asks, what series would you recommend to friends who just discovered anime through Attack on Titan?
Well, you can probably just march him right over onto Fullmetal Alchemist and Death Note.
Yeah, you know, the other stuff that were big hits with, you know, a more mainstream crowd.
Yeah, Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood is something I'd point them at. It's definitely got a similar style and tone.
I don't know. Death Note, of course, shares the director. It starts out so rocky. It's 13 episodes of poor execution before you get to competency. Like, I don't. There's a lot of people like it. I'm maybe way too picky.
We could have a whole episode, Hope, where it's just you and me arguing about which of those is better and why.
Right. We could. But I mean, like, there's a lot of people that are fans of Brotherhood, but the people that are fans of Brotherhood are like, yes, I saw the first show and that's why. And then I read the manga. Like, it's always, I saw the first show and then I read the manga. Or I read the manga and then I saw the show. You know, it's like... people that watch Brotherhood and have never been exposed to that franchise before are kind of rare, and typically the reaction I've seen is, oh, this looks really fun, I'll keep watching it because it looks really fun, but I don't, you know, like, it doesn't have that hook because it's just so, I don't know, like, this first 12 episodes are so awkward, the comedy doesn't work, the drama doesn't work, it seems to assume that you know a lot more than you do, there's a lot of heavy-handed narration, like, it just doesn't work, I don't think. But, you know, hey, there's another debate, I guess.
I really like Brotherhood.
Yeah.
I like it more than the original.
A lot of people do. I'm not in that camp.
It's okay. We have split lines again. Now I'm against
That's
you.
That's right. That's right.
Split lines again.
All right. Durga asks, what are some of your favorite monster movies? This can be any kind of creature. Personally, I have this bizarre weak spot for The Creature from the Black Lagoon,
mm-hmm.
also known as Gillman. I prefer to refer to him as The Creature.
Mm-hmm.
Those movies aren't very good, but for some reason I just like them. But I think the best like classic monster movie of all time is Bride of Frankenstein. But yeah, those are, I would say those two.
So we're speaking specifically of the Universal Studios.
No, you just said monster movies. I was just naming my favorites.
In general. My favorite stuff is the They're Among Us kind of stuff, like the Body Snatchers and the 80s horror classics like The Fly and The Thing. I like the I like body horror, and I like you don't know who to trust kind of stuff, and aliens that are gross. Just gross and scary.
Oh, I was going to say, well, aliens, mostly anything John Carpenter did in his heyday. Yeah, The Thing is right up there for me. And, sad that H.R. Giger has recently passed away.
Oh, shit, Alien, yeah. But that's another one, isn't it? That's the same vein. But yeah. Alien's another huge one, yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. It kind of goes without saying, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's timely to mention kaiju films with the new Godzilla film in theaters. I'm a big fan of those. One that I like that doesn't get a whole lot of attention is Daiei Films. The Gamera people made a series of movies in the 60s called Daimajin. And it's basically about, you know, a giant evil, you know, vengeful stone god comes to life, you know, a 20-foot tall statue and defends, you know, helpless villagers against corrupt lords. And it's these films are just beautifully photographed and just really fascinating and kind of weird. And you can get like all three of them on Blu-ray for like $10. It's a good get. That's like one of my big favorites. Even cosplayed as him once.
Oh, I should mention, speaking of kaiju, Gamera versus Gueron.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Gueron or Guron or however the fuck you pronounce it. The blade-headed guy. Now that's a fucking weird movie, and everyone should see it. So weird. Everyone should see that thing. Great, great movie.
I also want to throw in there anything that really Guillermo del Toro does, like Pan's Labyrinth, right. and Hellboy 2 specifically.
Yeah, Hellboy 2 is really del Toro'd up in a good way.
Yeah, I really enjoy those. They're not so, I mean, Hellboy 2 is not per se scary, but the creature designs are so memorable. I really love it.
Gilmore Del Toro and monsters. There's also Pacific Rim.
Yeah, but the monsters in Pacific Rim are not particularly memorable. Like,
I kind more so than a lot of Hollywood. I would say more. I mean, like, I think they could have been more diversified, but I'll still take Pacific Rim over most blockbuster. This thing is destroying a city. Things. I think they're more entertaining than that. Like, I'll take the Pacific Rim monsters over like. Typical comic book monster, comic book movie monster that shows up in third act. Yeah.
Okay, Hellrune asks, are there any horror anime that you have thoroughly enjoyed and considered or have revisited multiple times?
Well, for me, Serial Experiments Lane.
It's hard to, like, for some reason my mind goes a little blank when I think horror. I mean, like, the first thing that came to mind is Higurashi is rewarding on rewatch because when you know what's happening. Although the experience of actually being told the answers is not fun. Kai is a slog. But that first season is, it's scary. Like, it's, most anime doesn't scare me. Like, you know, like, horror movies in general don't scare me, but I'm still more likely to be scared by a live-action film than anime. I think Higurashi is the closest I've come to being frightened by an anime. And that's just because you don't know anything. Like, the whole time, it's again that whole you don't know who to trust thing, because it's like guy in small town with all of his friends are super moe and cute or whatever, and then they change and they don't tell you why. Like, it's not like a sort of an elfin lead situation where you know, oh well, she's secretly a government experiment and she's gonna turn on Higurashi. It's just they just go crazy and you don't know why, and it's weird little subtle things like he stays home from school because he's so scared of his friends and they send him a lunch. They're like, oh, we're sorry we missed you at school, and he eats it and there's needles in the rice balls and shit, and it's like, ah! It's like a tiny... It's a very tiny, visceral kind of horror instead of it being like big and over the top. And then they save their big and over the top for like once every four episodes and then their fingernails were ripped out or they were, you know, cut up and put in a trash bag and thrown into the river. But they save that. Like, they wait. You know, that's good stuff. But unfortunately, the answers, Kai, is just so hard to sit through. It's like, just watch the questions. Just watch it when you don't know what's going on. And then it's scary. But, yeah.
Mine would be Magnetic Rose. I always find it's a great twist on basically a haunted house film. Short, and it's easy to take down, and it's effective. So that'd really be the only one.
Yeah, everybody kind of listed most of the good stuff. I don't think horror is a genre that's done particularly well all that often in anime.
I mean, Helsing Ultimate is more, like, it's just so... gleeful.
I don't know why scary. People... It's not horror. That's it's an action. That's an gross. Action show.
Yeah, it's just gross. It's not horror.
It's not horror. Thing. Yeah, I wouldn't call it horror.
It's just gross.
You know, I mean, but if I had to say, you know, Curse of the Undead, Yoma, Wicked City... I'm joking, of course. Those are terrible.
Well, Blue Girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Oh, Zach.
All right, thoughts on Nisa going back to dub Toradora for the new release. Obviously, the sales numbers bore that out, and they decided to go back and dub it, and now you get a dub. So enough people bought it, and they had money to dub it. So
I'm satisfied with that strategy, and I think it's going to pay off for them big time.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. I bought the first two limited edition or premium editions, and I'll probably pick up the dub version. I'd like the show enough, and hey, it gives me a good excuse to revisit it after how many years I did watch it. So,
Yeah, I'm glad I waited. I'm like, yay, that worked.
Same here.
I kind of
had a feeling, you know? I was just like, come on, if anything is going to work out for these guys that would get a bilingual re-release, it had to be Toradora. Because those limited editions sold out so fast.
Yeah, and I remember, and this was years ago, when did that show come out? When was it first being subtitled?
2009, 2010, something like
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
2009, God. So when it was first coming out, me and my sister would watch it a little bit, but she was young enough, that was 2009, so she would have been like 10 or 11, and she couldn't keep up with the subtitles, really, and it was an uncomfortable watching experience for her, so I was like, well, maybe somebody will dub this someday. Cut to 5 years later, so now I can go, hey, remember this, like, 5 years ago that you were really enjoying, we couldn't keep up with? Well, here, if you still give a shit, here's a watchable version for you. And now she's much older, so I don't know, but I think she still prefers to watch things dubbed, so, yeah.
You're welcome, guys. You're welcome.
There you go. And it's like, hey, where was this a while ago? Yay.
Your happiness is because of me now.
And I see that someone in the peanut gallery is wondering how could they make enough people go back and double dip? Well, just look at the package they're releasing. It's going to include, more extras. It's a whole new collector's set. And I think the price is still pretty reasonable. So, it's the same reason why... a whole bunch of people are ditching their old DVDs and gearing up to get the re-release of that.
Yeah, no, I think it's fine. Maybe it'll, if anything else got super strong sales, maybe they'll go back and give it a dub,
Oh, and that, actually, that's very important. Both of those shows are also coming out on Blu-ray for the first time.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Although that is, I don't think you're going to get a gigantic quality leap on the,
Right.
On Toradora, but who knows? We'll see. Okay. Let's see here. This is scrolling a little fast. Megabatimus asks, will JoJo's Bizarre Adventure ever get released on DVD in the West or shown on Toonami? We'll see.
It's really hard to get around all that music stuff.
Yeah.
That's a big barrier.
Well, it's not insurmountable.
It's not insurmountable, but somebody's going to have to want to do it.
Yeah,
someone's going to have to really want to do it and spend a little bit more money than usual to try and make that happen. I think it's a coin toss. I feel like something might happen with that and happen soon, just because I feel like the cult of personality around that show on the internet has grown to the point where it's just like, now is kind of the right time for that to happen. So we'll just have to see if it does.
All right, we're going to close out on this one. Nikki Enchilada asks, what's a show you feel has the most rewatch value for you? And let's start with Corey on this one.
Oh, man. Knew you were going to come back to me. I would say anything that Gen Urobuchi worked on, basically. I'm going to go back and watch Psycho Pass. In a week or two, and it'll be my third time watching it. I love that show. And I think his worldview and his character building is second to none right now in anime. So, Fate Zero is going to be the same way for me. I really love them. And then there's always Monica, so...
People are throwing around... Like, I've noticed the companies are, like, latching on to his name now. Like, it's going out of style. Like,
they are.
Contributing, and it's like, literally, he just writes one episode of a thing or comes up with an idea, and all the rest of the crew is different, and it's like, you schmucks.
I did buy, one of those save editions of Blast Raider just to see if I can find him in there. even though that I watched the first episode and it is horrible on Crunchyroll. But hey, his name sells, and I think for good reason. He is right now synonymous with the three best shows I've seen in recent times. So those are the three that I put up there.
Yeah, I very seldom rewatch TV shows, largely just because who has time, man? I have so much new stuff that I still have to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, the stuff that I find myself revisiting is largely just the stuff I grew up with, like the really high-toned, intense, interesting-looking OVAs and films of the 80s. Like, I'll rewatch the Space Adventure Cobra film. I'll rewatch Megazone 2-3. I'll rewatch the Crusher Joe movie. You know, Arion, stuff like that.
The easiest answer for me is, if we're talking about how many things have I, like, rewatched, it's like, favorites, and it's stuff where, if it's episodic, I can just watch parts of it, like Kino's Journey or Mishishi. It's just like, oh, let me watch. Like, there's episodes of Mishishi I've only seen once, back when I first watched it years and years ago, and then there's some episodes of Mishishi I've maybe seen 5 times or something. Just because you can. But for a series that, like, beginning to end or large chunks of it, I'll just go back and, like, get more out of every time. Utena, like, easily. Utena is better and different, and you see something new every time you watch it.
Yeah, I've seen that whole thing 3 times, so that's a rarity for me. But it's worth seeing over and over, absolutely.
Yeah, it's dense as hell. Like, it's just... And I don't even know how I'm going to go about maybe rewatching Penguin Drum, because... Penguin Drum is, like, dense to a degree that is almost harmful. Like, it almost is too much. So I was like, man, I thought Utena was really hard to, like, pick absolutely everything up on, but Penguin Drum is really insurmountable, so whenever I get around to, like, revisiting that. But Utena is that right balance where it's really entertaining and you don't have to think really hard about it, but you catch something new absolutely every time, because it's just so... It's just so many pieces, so many things... every single shot is, like, planned out. Every single shot is, like, a little work of art. And it's like, hey, this shot has, like, 20 things that are meaningful in it, you know? And then there's the next one, and then there's the next one, you know?
Penguin Drum is a show that I feel like could have used another, like, I don't know, 10 episodes or something like that.
Or cut a character or two.
Yeah, or take some ideas out, like, one of the two.
It was, I mean, like, I think he just had creative constipation from, like, 10 years, 10 years on, and just like, like put all of it in one space, and it's like, whoa, slow down, too much, take some.
Hey, whoa, now I gotta plunge this. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Everything that I rewatch has been mentioned except for Evangelion, which I rewatch a lot. I think I've seen the Evangelion TV series, I don't know, 6 or 7 times, and I've seen End of Evangelion like 10 or more times. Utena. Obviously is a big one. I've seen the movie more than the show, but I've seen the show probably 3 or 4 times, and the movie probably another 10 times, something like that. Yeah, I don't know. Like, you know, the stuff I really loved back in the day is a lot of the stuff that I still love a lot now, and it turns out a lot of those franchises are things that people still really respond to, so I don't, you know... it's not like I'm sitting here rewatching Saber Marionette Jada X or anything, you know.
We would have to slap you if you were.
Yeah, right. You know, I'm not getting real excited about rewatching Record of Lodoss War or anything like that. So,
you are making Peter Chung very sad right now.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, I think that wraps it up for us. Sorry about the technical problems, but Mike, Corey, again, thanks for showing up and having this sort of fun late night question answering session. I really appreciate it. Great having you on.
Oh, it was a lot of fun. Thanks.
Thanks for having me on, Zach.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Hope, Corey, and Mike for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a little rating or review. We'd really appreciate it, and we'll see y'all next week.